Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today. President Trump recently announced TrumpRx, a new direct-to-consumer website that he claims will lower prescription drug costs in the United States. What is TrumpRx and how does it work? Will it help you access cheaper medicines or not? Peter Maberduk from Public Citizen has the details. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions to 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. In today's episode, we're talking about TrumpRx and how to lower prescription drug costs in America. So welcome to Peter Maberduk, the Access to Medicines Director at Public Citizen.
Great to be here with you.
Thanks. So tell us, what does Access to Medicines do?
For TrumpRx, what is it?
Well, what does the Access to Medicines group at Public Citizen do? What do you do?
Oh, sorry. We work to make medicine affordable for people in the United States and all around the world. We provide technical assistance to health agencies and civil society groups. We fight patent battles. And, we advocate. We lobby, do research-based advocacy. But the goal is for everyone to have access to the affordable medicine that they need.
So, given that you're an expert in affordable medicines, tell us about what is TrumpRx and what does it do?
So, unfortunately, it's really just a website. It's a website launched by the Trump administration that funnels people to other direct-to-consumer sites where they can pay cash for their drugs. And in terms of what it means for people's prescriptions, unfortunately, not that much for most of us. Though it was launched to quite a bit of panache, quite a bit of dressing up. So far, it's just 43 drugs, and most of those drugs have been on the market for many years. The median age is about 26 years. But the idea is that it's a place where the Trump administration can funnel some of the deals that it's been making with drug companies and advertise lower prices than list prices to patients who want to pay cash for those drugs. And unfortunately, it doesn't work out to be a good deal for most of us.
So if somebody is on an expensive prescription medicine, they should go to TrumpRx and check it out versus the price that they're paying now. If they have insurance, what are some things to consider?
Well, you're probably, for most drugs, you're going to be paying more through TrumpRx than you would be paying probably through your insurance. TrumpRx is really designed for individuals that don't have insurance, but do have the money to pay out of pocket for these drugs, or perhaps some people with high deductibles. But for most of us, you're going to be better off asking your pharmacist because, there's more than about 20,000 drugs approved by the FDA. TrumpRx only has 43 of them, so you probably can't find your drug on TrumpRx. But if you do, you might want to check that you can't find it for multiple price through a different seller.
So would you recommend then, if somebody's on an expensive prescription drug, they should check out, they can check out TrumpRx, because why not? But also there are sites like Mark Cuban's Cost Plus Pharmacy. There's a site called GoodRx. There are multiple places they can check online for pricing. Is that right?
That's right. And we recommend speaking to your pharmacist. We don't want to recommend a particular service here, but to find the best offer. In some cases, look, for TrumpRx, you can go and you can search, but looking at some of the drugs like a Protonix, which helps to calm stomach acid, you can get that for $200 through TrumpRx, or you can get it through for $6 through some other sites. Lopid, another Pfizer drug for cholesterol, $80 at TrumpRx, $20 through other sites. There are some exceptions. If you're looking for IVF drugs or certain GLP-1s, there are some cases here where you're getting a similar deal to what's now available from some of the direct sellers. It'll funnel you through to the drug makers in some cases. Those might not be bad deals, but they're very limited. And there too, you have to compare it to what you'd pay through insurance.
Mm-hmm. So it's really important to shop around, because TrumpRx for most people, for most medications, is not going to be the best deal.
We certainly agree that it's not going to be any deal for most patients, because what's really going on here is Trump is making deals with prescription drug corporations, these most favored nation pricing deals that he talks about, and then trying to get some of them to offer their drugs through this website at what looks like a what Trump is making look like a discount, right? Like if you compare a drug's list price to the TrumpRx price, the difference looks good. But nobody pays the list price. And typically you're paying with your insurance copay a much lower price than even the TrumpRx discounted price. So unfortunately, it's sort of a game with the difference between net and list prices that TrumpRx is playing, and it's not going to benefit most people.
So given that TrumpRx is not really going to solve the problem of America paying the highest prices out of any developed country for our medications, what can or should we be doing to have lower drug prices? And this could be the Trump administration, this could be Congress, this could be individual states. What can we do about this?
Well, we've taken some pretty significant steps in recent years through legislation. The Medicare Drug Price Negotiation Program is probably the best thing that we have going to lower drug prices, and it's already lowering the prices and our expenses by many billions a year. Those savings are projected to grow. We should make our price negotiation structure even stronger. We should start negotiating the prices on drugs as soon as they reach market. We shouldn't exclude so many drugs from the negotiations. And we should use international prices as a reference point. So look, what Trump makes, likes to talk about a problem that's true. Americans are paying the highest prices for drugs in the world, but there are effective and fake ways to solve that problem. And Trump is using a fake way. We could incorporate other countries' prices into the Medicare price negotiation program, for example, and say by statute that we're not going to pay higher than that price, that Americans, in fact, should not pay more. And we'd save quite a bit more money than we're saving through any of the Trump administration's initiatives so far. We need to be aggressive about drug makers and the games that they play. And what we're concerned about is that the Trump administration is actually distracting from the reforms that need to happen by making these deals with drug makers that actually make the drug makers look good instead of making them actually lower prices through legislation.
So when people talk about most favored nation drug pricing, what is that? What does that mean?
It's another way of saying getting the lowest price. And in this case, we usually mean the lowest price among comparative countries, other wealthy countries. We compare US prices to European prices and ask whether we're getting the best price. Now, Trump says this is what he's trying to do, but so far they've made secret deals with several drug corporations and they haven't published the texts. So we don't know if those deals will endure beyond his sort of 3-year tariff deadline. We don't know how most favored nation price would be calculated or how it would be delivered. We don't know how it will be enforced. And we actually don't know if that price would be lower than the best price that Medicaid already receives. So the discounts are kind of speculative at this point, and watching just the stock market, drug makers seem to be doing well, and investors are confident that they're going to continue to do well. So it doesn't seem like we've quite taken a serious bite at that particular pricing apple. But as I say, there are better ways we could do that. We could do a version of most favored nation pricing that, if we did it through legislation, could actually benefit Americans quite broadly. It's true, Americans pay the highest prices in the world. What are we going to do about it? Are we going to give drug makers a pass, or are we going to get serious?
Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying, I think, is that cutting secret deals with drug makers one by one and then putting a handful of overpriced drugs on this coupon website is not the same thing as Congress passing a law to enforce that we don't pay more than other countries for these prescription drugs.
I mean, there's so many problems with TrumpRx that it's kind of sad. It's so few drugs. The discounts largely aren't real, with, you know, with a few modest exceptions. And it's taking attention away from an issue that, like, more than 80% of Americans all agree, bipartisan, Democrats and Republicans, that we need serious drug price reform. We need it now. It's overdue. They are encouraging lawmakers to take on drug corporations. And instead, we're doing this stuff that really allows the drug makers to dilute the bargaining power of insurance companies and pretend they're doing something while actually taking control of their own pricing and actually kind of raising the direct consumer price that we might all be paying. So, you know, if we want to get serious, I think we need to think about it differently. We need to think systemically about why drug prices are so high. We need to look at the patent monopolies that drug makers have and chip away at those while increasing our bargaining power to negotiate better prices, and not just for Medicare, but for all payers. That's the next hill that we have to climb, is getting to a place where we're all benefiting from negotiated prices, and those prices are coming further and further down.
Mm-hmm. And I'm in Virginia, and I'm excited that our state legislature is working on a prescription drug affordability board bill that would actually let people in Virginia, like me, that are not on Medicare, have access to prices, the Medicare negotiated prices. So, you know, the federal government negotiates these drug prices for Medicare, and then prescription drug affordability board in Virginia would let all the other Virginians benefit from that. And Maryland and other states are looking at expanding their prescription drug affordability boards as well. So why is this so hard? I mean, everybody can agree that we pay too much for prescription drugs. Why did it take so long to get the Inflation Reduction Act passed that allowed Medicare to finally negotiate drug prices? And why isn't there more?
It's just the lobbying power of the drug makers. They have, I think the figure is nearly three lobbyists for every member of Congress, compared statistically. They, you know, obviously spend quite a bit on elections and otherwise. And that's the barrier that we have to overcome. Drug pricing is one of the most real and powerful examples of people wanting to lead and the leaders being way behind, sort of captured by the pharma narrative of, you know, innovation or value or whatever else. It's really a false narrative. So that's the challenge. You know, do we do what the American people want done and challenge drug makers and their business model directly, which is, after all, based on monopoly? And there are a few different ways that we can do this. You know, federal legislation is one. And as you mentioned, the state legislation and the movement toward these drug affordability boards is another very positive example. As a native Virginia myself, I'm very excited to see what's happening there, and we want to encourage that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Peter. For everybody listening and watching at home, if you're paying too much for prescription drugs, what can you do about it? Should you contact your lawmakers?
Should contact your lawmakers, and you should ask your pharmacist where your best deal may be Feel free to browse TrumpRx, but one of the dangerous things about it is that we're actually quite concerned that some people may end up paying more if they trust the site, and that it could be dangerous for consumers that way.
Well, thank you again for joining us, Peter, and keeping us up to date on TrumpRx.
Thanks, Laura.
And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. So welcome to Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Diane Archer, the founder of JustCare and senior advisor on Medicare to Social Security Works. So let's start with Louise, because there are some new Trump administration proposals for health insurance for future years. So not for now, but for the future. Tell us more.
Sure. So there's a lot. This is a very wide-ranging proposal, which is the case every year. Some of it is proposing to sort of retry some things that they did last year, but then got stayed by a judge. So there's a lot of stuff that's still up in the air. One of the things that I think would be interesting to consumers is that they have proposed allowing catastrophic plans and bronze plans with higher out-of-pocket maximums than would otherwise be allowed. And just to set the stage, the current rule for 2027 is that the highest allowable out-of-pocket maximum for any plan, whether it's in the marketplace or offered by an employer, as long as it's not a grandfathered plan, it would be $12,000. In out-of-pocket spending would be the highest. Obviously, they can go much lower than that, but $12,000 is the highest they can do. What CMS is proposing is that catastrophic plans, which are fully ACA compliant and are currently available in most areas, they're available in 36 states this year, would have a higher out-of-pocket maximum. It would be $15,400, so $3,400 higher than would otherwise be the case without this rule. And then they're also proposing that some bronze plans would be allowed to go above that $12,000 out-of-pocket limit, but no specific dollar amount. They would just have to fit within the actual value ranges for bronze plans. The reason that they're proposing to do this is in order to provide plans with lower premiums, because when you increase the out-of-pocket costs, you bring down the premiums. And it is true that it is better to have a plan with a $15,400 deductible and out-of-pocket maximum than to be uninsured. So if you are trying to pull people away from going without health insurance altogether, this is a better option. And if lowering the premiums by driving up the out-of-pocket costs is sufficient to bring those people into the marketplace, that's better than having them be uninsured. But a better alternative would be to fund the premium subsidy enhancements that we talked about, you know, all of last year that expired at the end of 2025. Because the problem we're facing right now is people who don't qualify for premium subsidies anymore because those subsidy enhancements expired, in some cases are facing paying 40 or 50% of their household income for a bronze plan, and that is unaffordable. So the idea here is to give them a more affordable option, but obviously with very high out-of-pocket costs. So it's going to only appeal to a really small segment of the population. And again, if Congress, this isn't something that CMS could do, but if Congress were to just extend the subsidy enhancements, reinstate them basically, that expired at the end of 2025, then you would no longer have people facing that, you know, possibility of paying 30, 40% of their household income for health insurance, and you wouldn't need a proposal like this. And the other thing, obviously, as Peter was talking about in his segment of the show, the cost of the underlying cost of care is what's driving health insurance premiums all across the board. Prescription drugs are a huge portion of it, but also hospital costs, medical device manufacturing costs. All of this is what is driving that's the reason we have such high health insurance premiums, is because healthcare costs so much. So to fix the underlying problem and drive down the cost of healthcare, which would then drive down the cost of health insurance premiums, and make it to where you wouldn't need such high out-of-pocket costs in order to have premiums be affordable. So there's a simple solution, which is just reinstate what we had the last 5 years and give people, make it so that the subsidies are large enough to make better coverage affordable. Because that is what we saw from 2021 to 2025 when those subsidy enhancements were in place. People upgraded from bronze, they upgraded to silver and gold plans. They were able to afford better coverage because of those subsidy enhancements. When the subsidy enhancements expired at the end of 2025, we don't yet have data for healthcare.gov states, but we know in the state-run marketplaces that have put out data so far, we are definitely seeing people downgrading again to bronze plans and catastrophic plans. So if you make the subsidies better, people can afford better quality coverage that has a lower out-of-pocket limit. That would be the simple solution. The House already passed legislation on that. Unfortunately, the Senate did not. So that could be the fix. If you want a long-term solution, then that's where you go to actually fixing the prices, regulating the prices that account for what's driving the underlying cost of healthcare in this country.
Thanks. So a plan with a $16,000 deductible sounds awful, but it may be better for some people than having no insurance at all, or having something that is not even insurance, like a health sharing ministry that could refuse to pay for what you need when you actually need it. Sounds like CMS is not the people to complain to, because they can't fix the root of this problem, and people should contact their representatives in Congress, and specifically their senators.
Right. As far as the subsidy enhancements, that's the senators, because they're the ones who haven't passed legislation to fix the subsidy enhancements. And yes, you're correct. CMS can't do anything about that. As far as underlying cost of healthcare, that could be any lawmaker, House of Representatives or senators. Contact your elected officials and discuss the issue with them, because that's something that Congress would need to address as a whole.
Thanks. And just like Peter was saying, the reason why drugs cost so much in America is because they have a lot of lobbyists and a lot of money to fight any chance of reform. Is the same thing true for why we have such high costs of healthcare in general in America?
There's a lot that goes into that. But yes, you do have lobbying efforts. I mean, pharma has very solid lobbying efforts. But it's also, the cost of hospital care. That is a trend that's driving health insurance premiums and has been for years. Medical device manufacturing is also driving healthcare costs. It's a whole big picture, and there's not one. You have to fix all the parts of it. The ACA did regulate the insurance side of it in terms of requiring, putting a cap on how much administrative costs for health insurance can be. And administrative costs includes all administrative costs, including profit and overhead and everything that's not paying for care. But there's no similar rule for all of the other components of our healthcare system, for hospitals, for drug manufacturers, anything like that. So it would be it would need to be a very wide focus to rein in the costs of healthcare across the board.
Thank you, Louise. And now it is Medicare Advantage open enrollment season through the end of March. Diane, can you talk about how do traditional Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans compare? Because people in Medicare Advantage have this opportunity now to switch.
I'd love to, and I'd love to actually talk about first how Medicare compares with the ACA and the plans in the health insurance exchanges, because what Medicare does is it does set provider rates, the rates that hospitals can charge, the rates that doctors can charge. And now, as Peter was saying, also the rates for some prescription drugs. So the way to go that's simple is to open up Medicare to everyone in this country. It's simple in theory, obviously, and politically much, much harder, but it is actually the only way to make healthcare affordable for everyone in this country. And here, I just want to throw in that the private insurers have been testifying in Congress about their high rates. And they're the first people to say that they have no power to bring down hospital prices, that the hospitals have strong negotiating power and that they can't control those prices. So it really is time, if we want affordable health care for everyone, to have a Medicare option or Medicare rates available throughout the population, and not only for people with Medicare. Subsidies are great in the short term, but prices just keep going up and they're unsustainable. And more people, as we know, 100 million people are in medical debt. So that brings me to the difference between traditional Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Traditional Medicare has three principal differences. Choice of doctors and hospitals are open. There's no network as compared to Medicare Advantage, where there's a restriction in terms of which doctors and hospitals are covered. Coverage, it's the same benefits, but you will absolutely get different services and costs. The costs upfront in Medicare Advantage are less, but in the overall, they can be a lot higher. So let me dig a little deeper here on all three of those points. On the choice point, again, virtually every doctor and hospital in the country takes Medicare. So if you are in traditional Medicare, you can basically see any doctor you want, with some exceptions, but few and far between. If you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, you'll find that the provider directory is often misleading. It suggests you can see doctors that actually are out of network, and you'll end up paying more for those. And not only are those directories misleading, but unfortunately, there have been findings of ghost networks that basically, often if you need mental health services, if you need rehab services, if you need nursing services, you will have a hard time accessing the services that you need. If you have cancer and want to go to a cancer center of excellence, most Medicare Advantage plans make it very hard for you to get coverage in a cancer center of excellence. So that's a big difference. And then when it comes to coverage, it does sound and seem, and in theory, it is the case that Medicare Advantage plans are required to cover the same services, or the same benefits, I should say, as traditional Medicare. But what we're seeing is that they cover very different services. And how does that happen, you would ask? Because, okay, cancer care is covered in both. Mental health care is covered in both. Well, it happens this way. In traditional Medicare, the treating physician decides with the patient what care you need. And almost all the time, Medicare covers that care. In Medicare Advantage, your treating physician determines the care you need. And then too often, the Medicare Advantage plan second guesses the treating physician, basically uses prior authorization as a means to delay and deny care that you need. And so too often there are delays and denials of medically necessary care, and you may not get the care that you need to live or to just, you know, have a better quality of life. So that is a huge difference. And unfortunately, on that, you have no clue. I have no clue which Medicare Advantage plans will give you the care you need and not second guess your treating physician, and which will not give you the care you need. But one report that came out a few years ago said that if you were in the 5% of worst performing Medicare Advantage plans, without naming them, you would find that about more than 10,000 lives a year could be saved if people were not in those plans, because people aren't getting the care they need. So that leaves me with the third big difference, is costs. And I think a lot of people end up in Medicare Advantage because the upfront costs are often nothing or very, very little. In traditional Medicare, actually, the upfront costs are equally nothing, but there's no out-of-pocket cap. And so you really need to buy supplemental coverage to protect yourself from high costs, because otherwise you'll be paying 20% of all your doctor services And if you have need cancer care and the bills, as you were saying earlier, Laura, can be hundreds of thousands of dollars, you could be out of pocket a lot of money. And that Medigap coverage that you can buy is about $2,500 a year for comprehensive coverage. It could even be higher. Sometimes it's lower. So that's a hefty chunk of money that you need to buy, to spend up front. In Medicare Advantage, you don't spend it up front, but you could end up, if you're not careful, in a plan that has an out-of-pocket limit of, you know, closer to $10,000 a year. So depending, if you're healthy in Medicare Advantage, you could save a bunch of money. But the reason you have health insurance is to protect yourself if you get sick. And often we have no clue whether we're going to need costly care or not. So you want to be in an insurance plan that will cover the care you need when you need it at a price you can afford. And again, Medicare, traditional Medicare doesn't have that out-of-pocket cap, and the Medigap can be expensive, unaffordable to people. So we need to have an out-of-pocket cap in traditional Medicare in order to make it an affordable choice for everybody who wants it. As of now, people go into Medicare Advantage often because it costs them less upfront. And then what we find and we see is that cost becomes an obstacle to care for these people, and or they end up in medical debt or even in bankruptcy because they can't afford the costs.
Thank you, Diane. And thank you, everybody, for joining us to learn more about TrumpRx and why healthcare costs so much in America. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us in the future for more on healthcare in America. And if you're looking for more affordable prescription drugs, there are resources on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
It's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, high up MAGA guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.